are starting early. Oh my goodness, you know, I'll tell you, the clock here is not the right time. So welcome to Your Legal Rights. This is Chuck Finney. The topic is stopping workplace harassment because of race, natural origin, and religion. My guests are Phil Horowitz, an advisor and former chair to the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. His offices are in San Francisco. My other guest is Maribel Hernandez, a member of the Executive Committee. She's also an attorney with the Erickson Arbuthnot Law Firm, which is a law firm in throughout California. She's in the Fresno office. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. We are going to be talking about things that if you feel you have been teased and you don't like it at work, if you feel that you're being harassed at work and you don't like it, we're going to talk about what the law does to protect you. If you're the person who's teasing, if you're the person who's harassing, we're going to talk about what you need to be thinking about and start aligning yourself with the law so that you don't get sued, your employer doesn't get sued, etc. Let's do this. Let me ask you, starting with you, Phil, if you don't mind, what, legally speaking, what is harassment in the workplace?
Well, harassment in the workplace, unlawful harassment.
And we're not talking about sexual harassment on this program. We've done that before. So we're talking about other things, race, national origin, and religion.
Okay. Well, harassment is where an employer or a coworker or someone who you work with, even though they don't work for the employer, is bothering you, particularly because of your race, your national origin, or your religion. It can start to take the form of so-called jokes, which the person telling may or may not think is funny, but which you sure don't appreciate. It can take the form of differential treatment, silent treatment, not being invited to social events at the company. It can get really nasty. It can include epithets, slurs against you. It could just get to a disgusting level, and it can get so bad that it makes it so people just can't do their jobs right. And in extreme cases, it can even cause people to become so mentally distressed that they go out on disability leave. They just can't take it anymore.
When you're confronted, now, to let everybody know, Phil Horowitz represents plaintiffs.
That's right.
In employment law cases. Maribel Hernandez is a defense attorney. She represents employers for the most part. Isn't that right,
yes.
Maribel? Okay. So we're trying to have a balanced program here. And I assure everyone that my guests are both very nice. They're actually friends of each other. There will be no blood spilled here, everybody. Okay. And we'll give those of you who would like to call in with a question, a comment, et cetera, the local phone number. And because it is also Call a Lawyer Night, I'll give you that number again in a few minutes. But if someone is being confronted, before it gets to be so awful that it could cause emotional distress, it could make you physically ill, it could make you feel that you don't want to work at this place any longer, what recommendation do both of you have for someone like this where there is either a supervisor or an employee or employees who are doing things that are really nasty, affecting your work at the place, making your life miserable? What do you recommend? Yeah, Maribel, please.
From an employer's standpoint, I would always recommend, because we have, as employers, we have a duty to prevent harassment. The most important thing for us is to know about it. So having the employee, and the recommendation to any caller out there would be making sure that you notify someone. If, of course, you have any particular concern that there would be a form of retaliation, then you may approach your supervisor or someone else, if you have a particular complaint procedure, to follow the chain of command mm-hmm. and reporting your concern. And it could be as simple as, I feel like I'm being teased and it makes me feel very uncomfortable. So we don't necessarily have to label the situation, but you could just state what specifics are making you uncomfortable.
How do you deal, though? Phil mentioned silence, where people You know, you walk down the hall, and here's some co-employees. They essentially don't even recognize you, which is silence, which could possibly be, as you were talking about, harassment. How do you get people to try to be cordial, try to at least have an environment in the workplace where you feel that, gee, I can talk to this person once in a while, et cetera, et cetera. How do you get somebody to respond to that?
It's awfully tough. Some people have deeply felt biases, and they just don't feel comfortable with someone that looks different or has a different religious background. Sometimes, though, you can try to reach out, find common interests. Right now, you know, the Giants are
sure.
in the World Series.
Of
you
course.
Can talk about, you know, that or some other shared interests. You know, there are ways to try to break the ice. Another way is to try to reach out through third parties, people who maybe, you know, you talk with and that the people who aren't talking with you also talk with
mm-hmm.
and try to get them to try to help get people being more professional and proper towards you.
If you believe, if you are the victim of harassment and you're having a real difficult time with this and you're wondering, gosh, if I complain to my supervisor, if I complain to maybe if my supervisor is the problem, I complain to someone above my supervisor. I'm very concerned in this economic situation that I may be retaliated against, and they either might demote me or they might fire me. How do you deal with someone like that, Maribel? And what do you tell them? What should they do?
I want to be sensitive to the size of the employer. In some cases, we have small businesses where they might be just their supervisor and you don't really have an outlet to complain to.
Mm-hmm.
In that particular case, you may want to have someone else, maybe a friend of yours that works with you, approach and talk about the situation, almost like have someone with you to voice the concern
mm-hmm.
with that supervisor or maybe someone above that supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, the fear is maybe lessened and there's more comfortableness in doing so.
What are the areas, as we try to develop this, what are the areas that perhaps are not protected? Why don't we, early in this segment of the program, why don't we, if you talk about a few examples of unprotected things, and then we'll get into more the deeper issues.
Well, the easiest example is bullying. If someone's just a bully and they bully everyone, it doesn't have to do with the person's race, national origin, gender, age, or any protected characteristic, and it's not in retaliation for complaining about something unlawful,
mm-hmm.
then it's uncivil conduct. It's not very smart of the employer to let that go on because you lose good employees, but there's no law against it. We did just pass a law in California that beginning in January 2015, employers will have to train their supervisors about how to avoid bullying. But bullying itself is still not unlawful.
But it will be. It will be. They'll have to do some training, but it still will not be unlawful.
That's right.
In 2015.
Still.
What a shame. What a shame. Give us an example of what we might appreciate as being bullying.
Well, you have the boss that just yells at everyone.
Oh, well,
you know,
yeah.
Everyone makes a mistake sometimes.
Jump. Jump.
Right?
When I say jump, jump.
Exactly.
And the boss isn't laughing. The boss is not laughing. The boss is really serious.
That's right. And the person who's being barked at's not laughing either.
Boy, I bet that's the case. Not being laughed at, yeah. All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of very fine attorneys here who are ready, willing, and able to talk to you off the air in this variety of areas: workers' compensation law, criminal law, legal malpractice law, estate planning, trust and probate law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate, and also he's a real estate broker. I'll tell you who these people are, by the way. Patent law, aviation law, lemon law, and tomorrow, We will have a bankruptcy certified specialist who's willing to have you call him on his 800 number from 8 to noon. That's tomorrow, Thursday, and I'll give you that number in a little while. So again, for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For On the Air, in a few minutes, we'll be taking your calls on the air, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about stopping workplace harassment because of race, national origin, and religion. My guests are members of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Maribel Hernandez is a member of the Executive Committee. Phil Horowitz is an advisor and a past chair of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section. And let's do this. Obviously, it would seem that it would make sense for someone who is being teased or harassed to initially try to let the other person know, you know, I really feel uncomfortable with this. I wish you wouldn't do that. Do you find that that can be in a decent percentage of cases effective, or is it really a waste of time, generally speaking?
It's a good first step. It really is. It's not going to work every time, but there are a lot of people out there who just don't realize the effect that what they say or do has on other people. Mm-hmm. So it's a good starting point. Also, it reduces the chances of retaliation, which is always a risk you face in complaining about harassment. If you can start in a low-key way and do it in a way that's not so accusatory, talk about how, you know, I know you like to tell jokes about this and that, and what you do on your own time is up to you, but I just want to let you know that those really hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you realize that. Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine that you would, you know, keep doing that if you really knew. And I wanted to let you know because I don't want there to be, you know, any unpleasantness between us.
Generally in the cases, Phil, that you handle for employees as plaintiffs, what generally has happened to them? I don't mean the specific facts, but how long have they waited before they are coming to you? What could they have done? What didn't they do that brought it to a point where now they're coming to see a plaintiff's attorney in employment law?
Well, most people, the last thing they want to do is see a lawyer for anything. It's sort of like taking a trip to the dentist. You wait.
It's worse. It's worse than going to the dentist, isn't it?
I'll leave that to others to determine. But okay. So they put it off as long as possible. They typically start by talking to the person that's bothering them. Then they might talk to a friend of that person and see if they can talk to them. Maybe they'll go inside to human resources or to someone they trust who's in management. And it's usually only when they've done a lot of efforts mm-hmm. for months and sometimes years to try to work things out that it gets to the point that they come and see me. Usually by the time they come and see me, they escalated it high enough and the reception, at least as the employee perceives it, was not a good reception. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're noticing that they're starting to get poorer performance reviews or they're being, you know...
As a form of retaliation or...
Exactly. Exactly. It's unlawful to retaliate, but it is painfully, painfully common.
Mm. Wow.
My thoughts about that are, as an employer, because we have the requirement to train under AB 1825, it's really important to explain to management on what forms it can take and how to address it. And one of the first steps in training any type of sexual harassment is to explain to the victim, per se, that you tell the person that to stop the behavior, that it really hurts you. And in some cases, it may take maybe a couple times to explain exactly the impact to you, because oftentimes it is teasing. And socially, we think of it as very natural. When we like someone, we tease.
Mm-hmm,
But that teasing can have a negative impact at some point if it's something that one person does not feel comfortable with. So training is really important because teasing could be or seem so neutral.
The training under California law it relates to businesses of what size in terms of number of employees?
50.
50. 50 or above?
Correct.
Okay. And as I understand it, that training is for supervisors. Is it for supervisors, essentially?
It is.
Not for employees?
Yes, that is true.
Okay. And it's every other year that the supervisors under California law are to be trained?
It's every 2 years.
Every 2 years,
initially,
yes.
It's within the 6 months of someone being hired, and then thereafter, it's every 2 years.
I see. Why is it then, and perhaps it's just too overwhelming in terms of dealing with all these employees, but I presume it's because you're hoping that the training of supervisors will filter down to the employees who are under the supervisors, as opposed to the law saying, well, you also need to train the employees.
My thought about that is oftentimes, and when I do or I conduct any kind of sexual harassment training, it's not just the employers that have 50 employees. It's everyone.
Sure.
We have small businesses that see a need for it. The importance of also having not just supervisors attend. I've trained just supervisors, and then I've had employee training, mm-hmm. so that they can recognize issues that come up, because as an employer, recognizing that we have a duty to prevent, that sector of employees certainly has to be able to know what to do when they feel a particular way.
Mm-hmm. I see. Very, very interesting. How long do you have? Give us a simple example, if you can, Phil, on this. If you've gotten to the point where you've been living with this teasing, with this harassment, and it's really affecting you badly, how long does someone have within which to bring a lawsuit for what we're talking about, the workplace harassment?
Well, you have 1 year to file an administrative complaint with either the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing or the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
But that 1 year starts, the ticking of the clock starts when?
Well, if it's one incident of harassment, it begins with that incident. But if there's a continuing course of harassment or discrimination, the clock does not stop ticking until it stops.
Okay. Okay. And in most of these instances, it doesn't stop, I presume.
Well, if the cases that end up in court, they've not stopped.
Yeah.
If it stops,
okay,
then presumably people move on.
So that's a 1 year statute of limitations in California, whether
that's
it's
right.
the state law or it's the federal law.
That's right.
Okay. You know, we're getting, there's a real concern about people coming into this country, especially from Africa, because of Ebola. And do you anticipate that this may show itself in terms of people who perhaps have come from Africa, but not necessarily recently? Can you see that there may be some kind of harassment that non-Africans will be placing on people who historically have family members in Africa or have come from Africa? Do you see that happening?
I've not seen it yet, but I'm really afraid that it's going to start happening.
Do you?
I am. If the epidemic spreads further, we saw this after 9/11, a lot of discrimination against people of the Muslim faith,
mm-hmm.
and that tragically is still continuing. I've represented a number of people who have been discriminated against because they're Muslim. Things in the news, people listen to, and they overgeneralize and start stereotyping, and then start acting out sometimes.
Any comments to
My comment to that is when we saw 9/11, a lot of larger organizations, what they did is they went in and trained on mm-hmm. particulars about what was happening in a different country and the impact here and what we needed to recognize and be sensitive to, because we didn't want the employees to begin to look at someone and by appearance make a decision or have our supervisors make decisions about who's going to be the next manager if that person, for instance, was Muslim. We didn't want the impact outside of California, outside the USA, to impact the working environment.
It is our Call a Lawyer night, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. 9917, workers' compensation law, criminal law, legal malpractice law, estate planning, trust and probate law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate, and also a real estate broker. We have patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration, and tomorrow, bankruptcy law. I will let you know who these people are in the second half hour of the program. 1-800-525-9917. If you would like to talk to my guests on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about... pardon me, stopping workplace harassment because of race, national origin, and religion. My guests are both very experienced labor and employment law attorneys. Phil Horowitz, he's an advisor and past chair to the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, and Maribel Hernandez, a member of the Executive Committee. And we will be taking your calls on the air in just a few minutes. What about someone who's gotten to the point where it is so difficult in the workplace that person is thinking about leaving, trying to find another job, can't take it anymore, maybe also thinking about filing a harassment or thinking about retaliation, but also filing a lawsuit? What is the concern that those people should have about if they are thinking that I can't stand it anymore, I need to find another job, my supervisor, my employer won't back me up on this? What about the thought that someone will go ahead, see a plaintiff's attorney to bring, let's say, bring a lawsuit? How does that affect the job potential, not in all instances, but generally speaking, of someone trying to get another job if the prospective employer who this person is interviewing with, or employers, realizes that this person is in the process of suing the past employer? What thoughts do you have as a plaintiff's attorney about that, Phil?
It can doom the employee, unfortunately, and that's all against the law, but it happens every day. One thing I sometimes advise people when they come and see me in these circumstances is it might be a good idea, before you raise anything further and get fired in retaliation, if that's the direction it looks like it's heading, to first look elsewhere, find a new job, get the new job, leave your old employer, start the new employer, and then begin legal action. Mm-hmm. It's also much easier to find a new job while you're already employed. There are a lot of labor economists who tell us that.
What thoughts do you have on that, Maribel?
As an employer, in the event that the employee does go to the DFEH or the EEOC, they have a mediation program now. So it is very confidential. And to some extent, unlike filing a lawsuit in a civil matter, the DFEH or an EEOC complaint is confidential. To obtain that information would be very difficult. And so, although we don't like it, it is one of the first steps that jolts us as employers and brings to our attention what the issue is and how it needs to be resolved.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really, really very interesting. Let's do this. William, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, thank you very much. First, I want to say that you have a really classy show, intellectually classy. That's the way
Gee, $20 goes a long way,
no,
William.
Really,
thanks so much.
It's really a wasteland out there, and you people are, I don't mean everywhere. But
well, hey, thank you for joining us on this evening of the seventh game of the World Series.
Maybe something wrong with me.
No, there's nothing wrong with you, William. You're all right. Go ahead. What was your question or point?
It occurred to me that often I think that perhaps our culture could learn from lessons about how things are handled elsewhere, whether it's healthcare or whatever it is. You know, what do people do elsewhere? And I'm curious, with respect to these issues that you're discussing, harassment on the job, do these things exist in Europe? And how are they handled, say, in the Scandinavian countries or in France or England?
I'm looking at my guests at this point, And I think they don't know, William.
Oh,
you've come up with a clincher question. Maybe we'll get someone who actually has lived in any one of those countries who will call in during the course of the next half hour who will elucidate us on that.
I had a question I was first going to ask until that occurred. Perhaps I could ask this then.
Sure, go ahead.
There are some people who feel that people are too what you might call touchy. I don't mean they're touching people, but I mean, everything you get sued about. The employer can't make a move. Actually, your Marty Nemko sometimes draws attention to that on the Sunday show.
Uh-huh.
I wonder whether the guests feel that the rules that have been created do indeed impede, you might say, the economic success of companies.
Well, that's interesting. Let me get some comments. Turn your radio back up, William, and thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it. I know, Maribel, you wanted to comment.
Well, I wanted to first comment on the question about worldwide. Having a lot of corporations such as, I don't know, Gap's, Amazon's out there, oftentimes the impact of a lot of the policies that they have in place there are impacting at that level. And mm-hmm. so we do see those types of issues coming up and being addressed, and maybe slowly and maybe not to the extent as California,
mm-hmm.
they are being addressed there also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to the point about the civility in the workplace, certainly sexual harassment or harassment in general, and our topic today, religion, race, and national origin, in those particular cases, unlike discrimination where it could be an incident, harassment in these particular areas, those three that I just mentioned, have a standard to show, which is severe or pervasive. And that normally has to be a higher level because the courts will look at it at an objective and a subjective. They look at a reasonable person in that particular protected class to define what specifically is harassment. And so it's not necessarily a very clear definition, unlike discrimination might be, where one is not promoted. In harassment in general, it is a higher standard.
All right. It is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. I want to, again, invite you to call in for Call a Lawyer. We have, I think we have six attorneys with us this evening. Let me tell you who they are. For workers' compensation law, Robert Wyman, a certified specialist. For criminal law, Jeffrey Hayden, a certified specialist in criminal law. Jeff is the president-elect of the San Mateo County Bar Association. For estate planning, trust, and probate law, Catherine Ray Wong, a certified specialist. For landlord-tenant law, Jessica Chilek, who's been really great in being with us a number of times in the last few months. For employment law, Ellen Mendelson, who has been contributing as either on the air or for Call a Lawyer over the years. For tax law, real estate, and he's also a real estate broker, is attorney Frank Adam, who's been doing this for at least 10 years. For bankruptcy law, now let me tell you, tomorrow, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available. That's Thursday, October 30th, from 8 a.m. to noon at his 800 number. No obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service that all of the attorneys who are here at the station and Leon do. They're very gracious with their time. His number is 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and you get his answering machine, leave your name and phone number and tell on the message that you are listening to Your Legal Rights, and Leon will call you back. And so if you're being hounded by creditors, this is a great way to get some information. If you would like to join my guests on the air, my number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134 for on the air. And again, the Call a Lawyer number, 1-800-525-9917. For those of you who may have joined us in the last few minutes, my guests are Maribel Hernandez, a member of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. She's an attorney with the statewide law firm Erickson Arbuthnot. She's in the Fresno office. My other guest is Phil Horowitz, an advisor to and a past chair of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. His offices are in San Francisco. So for those of you who are not let's say, overwhelmed with World Series and would like to talk with my guests on the air, I encourage you to call in. Don't wait till the last few minutes. And again, that number, 1-415-841-4134. And for anyone who has had a problem, let's say, of being harassed at work, teased at work, even if you've been discriminated at work, I'd like you to call in. And if you're an employer and you have something that you would like to share with us, whether you are critical of how difficult the laws may be for you or how you have dealt with it, I'd like to encourage you to call in. Maribel, you wanted to say something, I thought. No? Okay, all right. I thought you were letting me know about that. All right. There are some people who have, because of their religion, they have a certain dress, they have a certain grooming, men may have beards. What is the obligation under California law for an employer to accommodate someone like that?
Well, the duty is a reasonable accommodation. To the extent that it can be accommodated, an employer is required to accommodate. There is something called the undue hardship, and that is a standard that the courts consider various factors such as the size of the employer, the benefit, the financial cost to making the changes, but ultimately it is the reasonable standard.
It is a reason. And do you have anything to offer on that one, Phil?
Well, it's against the law to discriminate against someone because of dress or grooming or hair that they wear because of a sincerely held religious belief. And it would be extremely unusual for an employer to be able to show that it's an undue hardship. The employer cannot rely upon perceived customer preferences. Mm-hmm. So if it's someone dealing with the public, they can't say, I'm sorry, our customers don't want someone who has their hair covered or, that. So it's really rare. The only situation I can really think of is if someone needed a close-fitting mask to protect their breathing or something on the job, say a firefighter, it may be that possibly a beard would not be allowed for their own
Because of the safety issue of a mask like that, I presume.
Right, but it would be extremely unusual.
All right. Here's a question that's been brought into the studio, written down for me. If an employee is being harassed by his employer or her employer, isn't it better for the employee to stand his or her ground and not leave voluntarily? Question mark. Employer liability for wrongful termination would accrue more in damages than a claim based on harassment. Would you comment on this?
Well, the bottom line is for almost everyone, almost all the time, you're better off having a job than having a lawsuit.
Yes.
Lawsuits take years. They are a lot of trouble. They can be expensive, even if the lawyer takes it on a percentage of what they win. A bird in hand is worth two in the bush.
Yes, yes. Any comments from you, Maribel?
Yes. That does become the case. When I receive a case, oftentimes someone has filed with the unemployment insurance. And a way to continue, if that is being considered, is to put on the application that you left because you felt you were being harassed. Mm-hmm. That protects the employee from having absolutely no income while he or she continues to look for income.
Yes, yes. Now, is that accessible to a prospective employer, that kind of information?
No.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure that someone would not be reticent to put that information in such a government situation. Okay. All right. I think people are either they're watching the World Series or they're. What I want to do is I want to encourage you to call in, ask a question, make a comment. We're going to give you the results of the game at this point right now so that you don't have to either watch it or listen to it, so that you will join us. It is, it's at the bottom of the, I think, the seventh. And the score right now is the Giants are ahead of the Royals 3-2. So there you are. You don't have to watch the game. You can join us with your questions, your comments, 1-415-841-4134. And again, for Call a Lawyer, it's 1-800-525-9917. Let me mention this also. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. And this covers both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. Relatively recently, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco has expanded to have lawyer referral in Marin County. And if you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should be able to speak to a human being, I hope. That's what I strive for. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation with an attorney. And with some very minor exception, for half an hour, you will pay between $25 and $35. It's a great way to get some basic information about a legal problem that you may have. So I hope you don't need it, but it's there if you would like. And again, I'm going to encourage you to take advantage of Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917, and also encourage you to call and speak with my guests on the air, 1-415-841-4134. And now we're going to talk with Nick. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Nick, are you there? Go ahead. You're on the air, Nick.
Hi. Thanks so much for all of you, to all of you for taking the time and doing this wonderful service for all the listeners. I had a question related to a workplace. If a person has received their termination notice and if they go on FMLA, say, for example, if the termination notice says they are to be terminated next week, and if their FMLA is approved till end of next month, and if they're terminated, what are the
Now, you're using some initials here. What does that stand for, Nick?
FMLA, Family Medical.
Okay. All right. So they're being terminated because they're taking advantage of family leave. Is that right?
No. They were terminated for a budget reason, but then they applied for FMLA, and they got FMLA approved.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And the termination date is set before the FMLA expires. So essentially, they are terminated while they are on FMLA.
Let me ask you. What county are you in?
It would be in Alameda.
Alameda County. You know, I want to suggest, certainly my guests will respond to your question, but I think it's very important for you or for whomever you're calling in about this question. I want to give you the Alameda County Bar Association lawyer referral number, and I suggest that you or whomever you're calling for, if that is the case, make an appointment or call the lawyer referral service in Alameda County and make an appointment to go see an attorney who represents plaintiffs. And if you'd like to jot down this number, and then my guests will respond to you, it's 510-302-
Uh-huh.
2222.
Okay.
You got that. Okay. Phil, I know you want to respond to Nick.
Well, the question boils down to, did the employer terminate because they anticipated They thought that the person would go out on family medical leave. Mm-hmm. There are situations where that can happen. Let's say that the person's wife or partner's pregnant, and they were thinking, well, they're going to be taking, you know, leave soon because of that. Then that would be unlawful. But
under the Family Leave Act, Family Law Leave Act, what is someone entitled to, just so everybody else knows what that is, before you continue responding to Nick?
Certainly. Under the Family Medical Leave Act and the state counterpart, employers have to give up to 4 months of unpaid leave mm-hmm. because of the serious health condition of the employee or an immediate family member.
So it could be the husband of a pregnant wife?
Absolutely,
okay.
Or someone with an ill child
okay.
or an ill parent. Happens all the time. On the other hand, if the employer was going to terminate someone anyway, let's say it was just based on seniority, mm-hmm. they were having a reduction in force, then the fact that the person qualified for and was about to start family medical leave does not protect their job.
Really? I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any comments from you, Maribel, on that? No, okay.
No.
All right. Nick, I do hope that you make an appointment to try to meet with an attorney through the Alameda County Bar Lawyer Referral Service. I hope you'll do that.
Sure. Just to recap what was being said is if you are terminated while you are on FMLA, it still does not protect your job. Is that correct?
If the reason for termination was not because the person took their family medical leave, which you get up to 12 weeks for, but because, you know, some other reason, you know, like there's reduction in force, you're not protected. If the person was out on disability and is still disabled, they may be able to apply for state disability insurance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If they've end up being out more than 6 months, Social Security disability, so there's something of a safety net. But employers still are allowed to terminate if it's independent. There are oftentimes situations where it's unclear what the actual motivation is, and that's where things start getting more complicated.
Do you think it's clear or unclear, Nick, your situation you're talking about?
So my understanding was FMLA protects your job regardless, but this is new information to me. So what
okay.
I'm understanding is you can still be terminated for non-FMLA related reasons, say budgetary constraints or downsizing or whatever, while you are on FMLA.
Yes, that's right. But remember that sometimes some employers say it's because of downsizing, but the people they pick mm-hmm. are the ones they think are about to go on leave,
yeah.
or they pick someone because of their religion or national origin or some other prohibited basis. So you have to look down more deeply than what the employer says to figure out what their actual motive is.
And Nick, what I want to stress with you is, although my guests on the air are very knowledgeable, very experienced labor and employment law attorneys, the state bar does not give them the permission to give specific legal advice on the air. It's unethical to do so. So that's why I stress to you, because this is obviously a very significant problem that you are confronted with, that's why I stress to you to contact Lawyer Referral in Alameda County. Take the next step. Be willing to pay anywhere from $25 to $35. Doesn't go to the attorney. It goes to the Lawyer Referral Service, which makes that a very valuable service for the public. So good luck to you. And I'm glad you called. All right. So take care. All right. Again, the number 1415-841-4134. And Martin, can you tell me, are our lawyers for Call a Lawyer, are they busy on the phone or are some phones available? Two are on the phone? No, five are on the phone. Okay. All right. So we still have some phones that are available. I want to thank the attorneys who are here for Call a Lawyer Night, Robert Wyman, Workers' Compensation Law, Jeff Hayden, Criminal Law. We've got Catherine Ray Wong, Estate Planning, Trust, and Probate Law. Those three persons are certified specialists, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, Jessica Chilek for landlord-tenant law, Ellen Mendelson for employment law, tax law, real estate, and also real estate broker, Frank Adam. And we've got Leon Bayer tomorrow if you're being hounded by creditors. Mr. Bayer is a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, and there's no obligation on your part. You can call him tomorrow, October 30th, between 8 a.m. and noon. And pose your question, pose your problem, 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. If you get his answering machine, leave your name and phone number, say that you listen to Your Legal Rights, and that's why you're calling, and he'll call you back. He's been very, very gracious with his time. All right, we've got, I think, do we have somebody else? Not yet. All right, 1-415-841-4134. There are some issues that we haven't even touched upon at this point. What would you, we have about 12 minutes left of the program. What would you like to bring forward for the listeners, Phil?
Well, I think one important thing is to document what's going on if you're being harassed. So one approach is to contact a lawyer, just let them know what's going on, and then start keeping a log for the lawyer. As long as you only share it with the lawyer or a spouse or domestic partner, that will then be protected by the attorney-client privilege. Mm-hmm. No one else can find out about it, and it can help document things. It can help you remember when things happened, and it can also be, in a way, kind of therapeutic, and yes, also give you someone to talk to about it. Also, if there's any sort of harassment that you see that's by way of email or texts or voicemail messages, keep those. It's very important to preserve the evidence, and sometimes things like that can really make the difference. If you do go to the employer at some point, to HR, let's say this is a coworker and the employer totally disapproves of this, mm-hmm, when you come there with texts or voice messages, that's going to be very persuasive to the human resources person. They're not going to want that, and it can be a way to get it to stop.
Okay. All right. Sally, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Hi.
I work in child care at a center, and it's privately owned. And the owner of the school has on occasion mentioned that she is an at-will employer, meaning she can fire people for any. We're not under contract, and sort of she can fire somebody even if she just has a bad feeling about them. So it's sort of very open-ended. So I feel like it's a bit inappropriate to mention that when it's not being linked to something specific, and I'm also really curious about that.
Sally, let me, the line, I don't know whether you're on a cell phone or whatever, but it's not very clear. Are you a teacher?
I am.
And are you at a private school?
Yes.
You are. And yes. And why does this is the principal who says this, I can fire anyone I want?
This is the owner of the school that reminds the employees sometimes,
okay,
or the director, also one of the directors has reminded people in a staff meeting.
What's the point? What's the point? What do you feel? Why do you feel either of these persons is doing this? What's the point?
I think it's sort of, personally, I think they're feeling, like they need to remind people that there's no sort of like legal contract. You know, that they have power, basically, in the situation. So I'm really, you know, I have personal feelings about how appropriate that is and how good it is for workplace morale and all that. But I also am just really curious about the law.
Okay. Sally, I'm assuming right now you are in California.
I am in California.
Okay,
yes.
And the reason I ask you that is because the program is on the Internet, so essentially covers the entire United States, but we only deal with California law. If you will, should she turn her radio back up? You don't want to ask? Okay, Sally, if you will turn your radio back up, my guest will respond, okay?
Okay, great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Maribel, please.
So, Sally, it is true that we are an at-will state. The way that you have described the comments being made, I understand certainly how you're feeling. It does not help the employee morale to be told you're at-will employer. One thing that you may do, and it is the topic of today, is probably go in and speak to this person and explain that it's not very conducive to wanting maybe you to come back to work or work productively because there's some sort of apprehension in hearing this continuously.
Any comments, Phil?
Well, here's the law in California where there's a presumption you're at will. There can be an implied or express, that is to say, explicit contract that you're not at will. But many employers have employees sign contracts saying that they're at will.
Mm-hmm.
So then they are at will. But at will only means that you can be fired as long as the reason doesn't violate the law. So at-will employees are still protected against harassment.
Mm-hmm.
They're still protected against discrimination. They're still protected against being terminated in retaliation for opposing something unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that this raises, of course, is there is one way that you can make it that it's no longer at-will, and that's by unionizing.
Yes, of course.
So, you know, what this employer is doing is it's almost like they're saying, hey, bring in a union if you want some protections. And certainly for teaching and a lot of other professions, having a union in place gives the workers a lot more protection.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you and your coworkers might want to have a little talk.
But the problem is, I suppose, if the employer finds out what's going on here, and the employer takes the position that, well, you are an at-will employee, the employer is going to fire those people.
It's against the law to fire someone for union organizing or collective concerted bargaining activities.
I'm glad you brought that up.
And that's the National Labor Relations Act that covers that.
So, Sally, those are available to you again because obviously this is something that for some reason the owner of this school it sounds to me a little bit like bullying that we were talking about. You do as I tell you to do, or my thumb is on you and you're gone. But, Sally, you know, again, you might want to talk with someone at your County Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service and start figuring out what you and perhaps some of the other teachers might think you'd like to do, whether or not you want to unionize or whatever, but certainly you got nothing to lose and maybe a lot to gain. So, all right, the number again, we have a few minutes left, 1-415-841-4134, and for Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For those of you who have been listening to us, I greatly appreciate the fact that you are listening to this program and you haven't given us up for the World Series. My guests haven't given us up, and I haven't, and so neither have the attorneys who are here for Call a Lawyer. And Joanne is putting on the board, it's the bottom of the eighth. It's still the Giants are leading 3-2. So there you are. Okay. And whatever else would you like to talk about, Maribel?
Well, I wanted to highlight that not only the employer is liable for harassment, a supervisor could be liable as well as a coworker. And that is important because as we train as employers, training at every level will be important.
So there we are. Okay. And anything else that you feel you'd like to advance? Well, in terms of someone wanting to pursue a lawsuit like this, what is the general type of financial arrangement that someone would find with a plaintiff's attorney?
Well, most people who've been fired unfairly,
they don't have nothing.
They don't have the money.
Yeah.
So what we normally do is we charge a percentage of what mm-hmm. we can win for them.
Yes.
So what that does is two things. One is it allows people with good legal claims to bring them. But the flip side is we lawyers representing employees aren't able to take cases that are bad cases.
Sure.
Because
you can't afford to.
No. So we really serve a screening process mm-hmm. in that way and only bring those really serious cases where we're really convinced after an investigation that people are wrong. So what we'll do is we'll look at whatever documentation the person has. We'll want to know about coworkers or other people they know who may be able to be witnesses or at least, you know, do a reality check that this is really happening. So, you know, just be prepared if you're calling someone, you know, have a chronology ready, have names and phone numbers of witnesses if there are any, and anything you think will help support the case, bring that to the lawyers so they can look at your claim.
How do employers, in terms of the clients that your firm and that you have had, how do they try to avoid lawsuits?
By training. Really important. Back to the duty to prevent, training is important because it cuts across all levels, making sure employees are aware of what they're responsible to do and not do. Immediate investigation. So when an employee does come up and complain, the promptness of that investigation could prevent much of what potentially could happen, and it really makes the employee feel that they are being heard. Another thing is maybe communication throughout the entire investigation. At some point, some employees may be put on an administrative leave if they want to go on a leave, or those people being investigated may be put on leave. So there's various ways. As an employer's attorney, I would always recommend policies have to be in place, communicated, accountability to the policies. But also, when you're going to hear a complaint, have a procedure where employees have more than just one option to go to. And then ultimately, really investigate the claim and communicate the results.
So the training of the employers, it sounds like you're talking about employers who have 50 or more employees. No?
No, I'm not. I would say that every employer, whether you have one, two, because harassment impacts everyone, and it applies to an employer who's public or private, I would say definitely train all your employees, supervisors or coworkers, because they can all be liable, and an employer can be liable for their actions.
Well, that's a great way to send a message. I want to thank you both very much for joining us.
You're
on
welcome.
Your Legal Rights. It's been a delight to have you here. Both of my guests are connected to the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Maribel Hernandez is a member of the Executive Committee. She's also an attorney with the Erickson Arbuthnot Law Firm in California. Her office is in Fresno. Phil Horowitz is an advisor to former past chair of the Executive Committee, and his offices are in San Francisco. Thank you both very much.
Well, thanks for having us, Chair.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Additional funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about an update of workers' compensation laws and issues. If you've been injured at work and wonder what your rights are, please join us. My guests will be Jason Marcus and Lester Friedman. They're members of California Applicants Attorneys Association. Also joining them will be Alice O'Sullivan. All three guests are certified specialists of the workers' compensation law by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.